Today's Friday, March 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, more troops are headed to Afghanistan.
I do believe it will involve additional forces to ensure that we can make the advise and assist mission more effective.
Also ahead, several states challenge President Donald Trump's revised travel ban. House Speaker Paul Ryan tries to sell his new health care plan. Kevin Enox will tell us about a flying driverless taxi cab. And seniors outside Washington take to the airwaves. That's all on today's International Edition. Thanks for being with us. The top U.S. military commander for the Middle East warned on Thursday that the United States would need more troops on the ground in Afghanistan to stave off a resurgent Taliban. General Joseph Votel, who heads the U.S. Central Command, told the Senate Armed Services Committee he was currently working on a new strategy to break the war there out of a stalemate.
Both General Nicholson and I are forming our best advice and recommendations to the Secretary, and we look forward to moving forward with that. I do believe it will involve additional forces to ensure that we can make the advise and assist mission more effective.
General John Nicholson, who commands NATO forces in Afghanistan, said last month that he needs thousands more troops to break the stalemate. General Votel's testimony came as a contingent of U.S. Marines arrived in northeast Syria to provide artillery support for local forces in an upcoming assault on Raqqa, the de facto capital of the Islamic State group. But there appears to be no final agreement yet between Washington and Ankara on the disposition of the Raqqa force, whether U.S.-backed Kurdish militiamen or Turkish-led Syrian rebels will be in the vanguard to oust an estimated 4,000 Islamic State jihadists. At that same hearing, Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman John McCain asked Votel if conflict between Turkey and Kurdish forces could hinder the fight against the Islamic State group.
I think there's a possibility of an impending conflict between Turkey and the Kurds, as opposed to us all working together to try to defeat ISIS and remove them from Raqqa. Do you see that as a scenario that we should be concerned about?
I do, Mr. Chairman, and to that end, we are trying to take actions to prevent that from occurring.
As the Marines arrived in Syria, Turkey's foreign minister Thursday warned that Turkish-led forces will attack U.S.-backed militiamen from the Kurdish People's Protection Units, or YPG, if they don't leave a key town in northern Syria. Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu said Turkish forces would strike the YPG in Manbij, arguing the Kurdish occupation of the town is a hindrance to Turkish efforts to carve out a safe zone in northern Syria. That disagreement over Syria comes as Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan visits Moscow for talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. As Dorian Jones tells us, this meeting is the latest step in rapprochement efforts between the countries after Turkey downed a Russian bomber nearly 18 months ago.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan will be accompanied by several of his cabinet ministers for bilateral talks under the auspices of the High-Level Cooperation Council. The council was created as part of rapprochement efforts between the countries after the Turkish downing of a Russian jet operating from Syria in 2015. Erdogan is to meet Friday with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. Murat Bilhan, an analyst with the Turkish Asian Center for Strategic Studies, says the agenda will be full.
Syria will top the agenda, plus, of course, the normalization of relations in the economic cooperation field with the Russians should be discussed also. So I don't see many thorny issues between Russia and Turkey, because they have already started escalation of positive relations, positive cooperation.
With the Turkish economy slowing and rising unemployment, Erdogan is expected to be pushing for Moscow to end sanctions imposed against Turkey after the downing of the jet. Former senior Turkish diplomat Aydın Selçin says despite nearly a year of rapprochement efforts, there have been few concrete gestures by Moscow.
The relations are better, but on the other hand, there is no concrete development progress between the two countries, because we know from Mr. Çavuşoğlu that even that famous tomato issue is not solved yet, the export of tomatoes from Turkey to Russia. So there is little progress actually, but rhetoric-wise, everything is going for the better.
Turkish media report that Moscow has agreed to ease some trade restrictions, but Syria could again threaten relations. Earlier this year, the Syrian Kurdish group, the PYD, opened an office in Moscow. Ankara accuses the PYD and its militia, the YPG, of seeking to create an independent Kurdish state on its border. It also charges the PYD with being affiliated to the PKK, which is fighting the Turkish state. Observers say Ankara has been muted in its criticism of Moscow, which last month hosted a gathering of Kurdish groups from the region, including the PYD. Selçen says with Russia's growing military and political influence in Syria, Ankara properly recognizes it has to work with Moscow.
From now on, informing a policy towards the Kurds of Syria, and in particular towards those PKK-affiliated elements in Syria, that they will have to take into consideration what Moscow and Washington, D.C. say. The Russians also are pulling, let's say, the Kurds of Syria to be more realistic with Damascus. Moscow shows the limits of what can be done and what cannot be done.
Erdogan is expected to offer potentially lucrative arms deals, including possibly purchasing Russia's S-400 anti-aircraft missile system, which is incompatible with its NATO partners. Weakening Turkey's ties to its NATO partners is widely seen as a goal of Putin's foreign policy, while analysts say Erdogan is eager to send a message that Turkey has alternatives to its traditional allies. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Checking on some of the other top stories in the world, South Korea's Constitution Court has upheld the impeachment of President Park Geun-hye, making her the first democratically elected president to be removed from office in the country's history. A man was arrested after injuring seven people with an axe at the main train station in Dusseldorf, Germany, in what appeared to be a random attack. EU leaders re-elected Donald Tusk as president of the European Council, even though his home country of Poland tried to oust him. Pope Francis says the Catholic Church should start considering whether to let married men serve as priests to address a shortage of clergy. And the Egyptian Antiquities Minister says a massive 8-meter statue found in a Cairo slum last Tuesday probably depicts Ramses II, who ruled Egypt more than 3,000 years ago. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Thanks for being with us. Six U.S. states are challenging President Donald Trump's revised executive order banning travel from six Muslim-majority countries. The state of Hawaii has already filed suit, arguing the new federal order will harm Muslims living in the Pacific Island state. Doug Chin is Hawaii's attorney general.
As much as you can try to clean up the language that's in the new order, you still have all of the president's statements in 2015, 2016, 2017, his surrogates, all saying this is a Muslim ban. And so you can't erase that. And so to continue on with this, it just isn't the right way to go.
Five other states, Oregon, Minnesota, New York, Massachusetts, and Washington, have banded together in a combined challenge to the latest order from Trump, meant to replace an earlier decree that was overturned by U.S. courts. Bob Ferguson, Washington State's Attorney General, said that the states have a solid legal argument.
The president, or anyone else who's subject to any injunction, cannot simply repackage it in a way and say, now we're clear of that injunction. That's up to the court to decide whether the new action is sufficiently different to cure the underlying defects that were in place that caused the original injunction.
President Trump signed a new executive order Monday barring citizens from 6 countries, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen, from traveling to the United States for 3 months. It also suspends for 4 months the U.S. refugee resettlement program. Foreign travelers who received visas to the United States before January 22nd or who already are legal permanent residents of the United States are exempted from the new order. The president's new immigration order is narrower than the original version, Ferguson said, but that does not mean that it cured its constitutional problems.
You cannot tweet your way out of it, right? It doesn't work that way in a courtroom. And so, yes, it's my expectation that we will continue to prevail, and certainly my expectation that the president will respect the decisions of the court, even if he does not necessarily respect the individual judges who are rendering those decisions.
A federal judge will hold a hearing on Hawaii's lawsuit on March 15th, 1 day before the new ban is set to take effect. The revised order removed Iraq from the list of countries whose nationals were to be barred from entering the United States and also clarified the exempt status of so-called green card holders, legal permanent residents. The son of the late boxing champion Muhammad Ali told members of Congress Thursday he believes his recent detention for extended questioning at a Florida airport shows the need for legislation to end racial profiling. Democratic lawmakers asked Muhammad Ali Jr. and his mother, Khalila Camacho Ali, to speak and answer questions at a forum highly critical of President Donald Trump's immigration policies. No Republicans attended that forum. Ali said he was detained for more than 90 minutes upon returning to the U.S. last month from Jamaica. He said agents asked him who gave him his name and asked his religion.
Obviously, I don't think they believe me. So I told them that I was Muhammad Ali's son. And they still didn't believe me. So they took me into a room and asked me the questions again. And I answered them, just like I did before. So I'm sitting there waiting for about an hour and 45 minutes. And then they tell me, okay, you're free to go. And I was like, okay, so why was I detained? I said, oh, we were just doing our job. Okay, your job is to detain people and ask them about their religion?
Khalila Camacho Ali said that she was asked similar questions to Muhammad Ali Jr. by Customs and Border Protection agents.
And they said, well, what's your religion? I said, are you kidding me? What's my religion? I'm not going to even tell you who I voted for, but why you want to know what's my religion? I said, okay, I tell you what, I'm not going to be, you know, ornery or nothing. I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm not going to say Christian just to get out of here, but I'm Muslim, okay? Is that okay with you?
Ali Jr. and Camacho Ali, the ex-wife of the former boxing champion, both challenged lawmakers to support legislation that has, over the years, struggled to make it out of committee.
I'm just happy to be here, and not just would love to join the fight to end this racial profiling act. I mean, this is great. I mean, America is already great. And we don't want nobody to stain that or take that away from us.
Supporters expanded the legislation's scope this year to explicitly ban religious profiling by law enforcement agencies, a move they said was necessary to counter what they consider anti-Muslim sentiment in policies enacted by the Trump administration. The legislation would provide grants to law enforcement agencies that adopt the best practices and training to prevent profiling. Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives scored 2 legislative victories Thursday as they attempt to scrap and replace former President Barack Obama's health care plan amid mounting opposition. In a pre-dawn vote along party lines after 18 hours of debate, the House Ways and Means Committee approved a Republican proposal to replace the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare. After also working feverishly overnight and some 10 hours later, The House Energy and Commerce Committee overcame Democratic delays and approved the replacement bill called the American Health Care Act. In an attempt to consolidate Republican support, House Speaker Paul Ryan showed up Thursday afternoon with a PowerPoint presentation, a laser pointer, and no jacket, with his sleeves rolled up, to brief reporters on the legislation. He said passing the bill is important because it keeps a long-time promise that Republicans made.
We as Republicans have been waiting 7 years to do this. We as Republicans who fought the creation of this law and accurately predicted that it would not work, ran for office in 2010, in 2012, in 2014, and in 2016 on a promise that we would, if given the ability, we would repeal and replace this law.
Ryan said that the current legislation making its way through committees is the Republicans' best chance to keep their promises and to overturn Obamacare.
This is the closest we will ever get to repealing and replacing Obamacare. The time is here, the time is now. This is the moment, and this is the closest this will ever happen.
Meanwhile, House Minority Leader Democrat Nancy Pelosi of California said the proposed legislation shows that the Trump administration and congressional Republicans do not understand what is needed for health care in the United States.
It's indicative of the fact that the president really doesn't know what he's talking about when he talks about the Affordable Care Act. The goals of the Affordable Care Act were threefold: to reduce cost, to expand benefits, and to enlarge access to insurance and affordable care for all Americans.
Pelosi said that Republicans seem intent on rushing the legislation through without making sure of its impact and its costs.
Republicans are racing this bill forward before the CBO can truly expose the consequences, the catastrophic consequences of their health bill. And this is in stark contrast to when we passed the bill.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell said that earlier legislators need to see a Congressional Budget Office estimate of the impact the measure will have on the federal deficit. Other lawmakers, such as Republican Senator Tom Cotton, maintained the rush to approve a replacement bill, particularly without budget estimates, would have long-term detrimental effects. In addition to mounting Republican congressional opposition, influential health groups such as the American Medical Association, the American Hospital Association, and the AARP, which advocates for older people, are coming out against the bill, warning that it could result in a rise in the number of uninsured people. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Coming up, we'll hear about a driverless taxi that flies, and senior citizens take to the airwaves. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. How about a driverless flying cab that comes to you, or a locket that sends text messages? What do you think of a bike lock that you activate with your mobile phone? Well, these are not fantasy. These are some of the things that Kevin Enochs tells us about in his latest tech update.
Now, wouldn't this be nice? A driverless taxi service that comes to you. and lifts you right out of traffic. From road to sky to rail, the pop-up capsule is the dream of Airbus and car design company Etal Design. It was presented at the Geneva Auto Show. If you need to send a quick email or text without typing, try the Sendstone. The small pendant can fit around your neck or wrist. Just tap and talk. The Sendstone app translates your spoken words into written ones and transmits them via text or email. The project was funded by a Kickstarter campaign, and the Ukrainian design team hopes to have the device on the market in July. Finally, a new way to keep your bike safe and to monitor it via phone. Called the Biseku, it's designed by a group of South Korean engineers. It fits on the front wheel and locks and unlocks via phone. When the bike is moved, an alarm goes off, and the owner gets a text. It debuted at this year's Mobile World Congress and should be on the market later this year. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
Some senior citizens who moved to Charlestown Retirement Community in Catonsville, Maryland, have a chance to start new careers in television. As Faiza El-Masri and Faith Lapidus tell us, no matter what they did before retiring, they're encouraged to participate in creating a range of programs broadcast on a closed-circuit 24-hour TV station.
Hello, I'm Stephen Schimpf. I'm a retired physician and a resident here at Charlestown. I want to talk to you today about gluten.
Megatrends in Medicine is one of two shows Dr. Schimpf is hosting on Charlestown Retirement Community's Channel 972. Aging Gracefully is the other one. Both deal with nutrition and lifestyle.
It's not me giving medical advice on a problem. I clearly avoid doing that. You know, that's for the physician in practice. And I say to people, if you have a problem, get over to the health center and see your doctor. But we deal with issues about aging, how our bodies age, actually the physiology of it and some of the mechanisms, and how we can affect that. And we can affect it with our lifestyles.
Dr. Schimpf says the biggest challenge about aging is acceptance.
If I go look in the mirror, I see a person who's older than I think I am. And I say, gosh, when did he get that old? Because I don't feel old. I really don't. It is a thing about accepting, but not in a negative way, in a very positive way. We are getting older. Every one of us does. How can we make the best use of that time? How can we keep ourselves as fresh as possible?
Viewers like Dr. Schimpf's shows because they see themselves reflected in them, says community TV manager Tom Moore, adding that's also the case with other shows hosted by residents.
When I have residents involved in television production, it truly becomes public TV because they can voice things from their perspective, which myself, the staff, may not be able to adequately do.
Residents are creating a wide range of shows.
We have shows that talk about residents and their pets. We could easily highlight resident pets, but we also want to talk about how important it is to take care of a pet as we get older, both the pet and ourselves. To take care of a pet while living in a community with 2,000 people. We do a program that looks at people's apartments. People love to go behind the doors of other people's homes, see what their homes look like. We have programs where we interview our residents and staff. We do garden tours where the residents have their own gardens here, whether it's outside of their patios of their apartments, or we have a public space where you can grow gardens. If you want to grow like vegetables, you can do that. So we'll tour those gardens with that resident and show people what the gardens look like and give them some gardening tips also.
Moore says the environment here invites new ideas.
So if a resident comes to me and says, you should do a program about something, I will often say, will you help me with that?
That's what happened when Eugenia High, a former social worker, moved to the community a couple of years ago.
I told him, well, travel's my passion, and that's when he said, well, maybe you might want to use a video camera to, you know, record some of your trips, and you could share it with other residents here.
So she learned how to work a video camera. On her recent trip to Iceland, she focused on nature, while in Mongolia, she was attracted to the country's culture and traditions. High is now preparing to host another show that's also about traveling.
What I'll be doing is interviewing residents who've gone on different trips, and I'll be asking them, you know, questions about maybe why they chose that trip, what happened during the trip.
Shortly after the Charlestown Retirement Community was founded in 1983, its directors launched a closed-circuit TV station, hoping to connect residents. The television channel has evolved over the years and became more popular when residents started to volunteer to help with its programming. The community's executive director, Clara Parker, says Channel 972 reflects what active retirement can be.
Retirement living here is not a place to come and be taken care of. It's a place to come and live and thrive. You know, we do have residents who are homebound and can't get out, so the TV is a way for them to be a part of the community, to be engaged with their neighbors, to experience from a peer perspective what's going on, and it makes it very relatable for them.
That's how Channel 972 keeps the community connected and helps the residents stay active and creative. For writer Faisal Masri in Catonsville, Maryland, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. You can find more on the stories you heard on our show by logging on to our website, voanews.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @VOA_IE. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, John Ellison. And thank you. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has carried out more than 30 airstrikes in Yemen in recent days against the terrorist group Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. This dangerous terrorist group remains intent on attacking the West, said spokesman Navy Captain Jeff Davis. These counterterrorism strikes were conducted in partnership with the government of Yemen, Davis said, adding U.S. forces will continue to target Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula militants and facilities in order to disrupt the terrorist organization's plots and ultimately to protect American lives. The aim of the strikes is to keep the pressure on the terrorists and deny them access and freedom of movement within traditional safe havens, Davis said. They've taken advantage of ungoverned spaces in Yemen to plot, direct, and inspire terrorist attacks against the United States, he added. Recent actions have targeted militants, equipment, and infrastructure in the governorates of Abyan, Al Baida, and Shabwa, and will degrade the terrorist group's ability to coordinate external terror attacks and limit its ability to use territory seized from Yemen's legitimate government as a safe space for terror plotting, said Captain Davis. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula remains an extremely dangerous Al-Qaeda affiliate and is taking advantage of the chaos in the country from the civil war there, Davis said, noting that the Al-Qaeda organization has more American blood on its hands than the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria does. Davis said Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula is a deadly terrorist organization that has proven itself to be very effective in targeting and killing Americans, and they have intent and aspirations to continue doing so. This is a dangerous group locally, regionally, and transnationally, to include against the United States, the West, and our allies, said a defense official speaking on background. We'll continue to work with the government of Yemen and our partners on the ground, said Captain Davis, to defeat Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and deny it the ability to operate.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.